Okay, this is December 29th, 1958, and this is a rundown on Area HCO Secretary. First thing let's take up is the character of HCO and what it is. Public Communications Office was originated to help me wear my hats. This could be said to be to help me get people to get the work done, help me get people to get the work done as a different look than getting people to get the work done. Get the idea? Well, an org sec or an ASOC sec, association secretary, as in the Sterling areas, he gets people to get the work done, or she does. And a central organization is basically a service organization. And every time we have asked them to do any of the functions which are now included in HCO, they have failed. They have not failed slightly, they have failed miserably. They evidently cannot or will not do these things. Now, that's all very well, but it means that they're basically a present-time organization. In other words, they've got PT. Now, there's one department in it which is promotion and registration, which is futures and past. And that's its only futures and past thing. It not only registers the PCs coming in today, but it gets PCs to come in the future. And it takes care of PCs by correspondents who have come in the past. You get the idea? But other than that, practically everything in a central organization is present time. Now, when you get this much present time up against dissemination, writing of books, planning, that sort of thing, it swamps what we're trying to do. And as a result, HCO grew up as a natural thing, not as a planned activity. All the time I was planning various activities of one kind or another, various organizations, why HCO was busy growing the whole time. And I never noticed it. And gradually, it boiled down to this. Its evolution boiled down to this, that in every central organization area, somebody has to be looking out for dissemination, somebody that's books and things of that character, somebody has to look out for special events, such as congresses, ACCs, things of this character, or even such a thing as a film show. Somebody also has to look out for the quality of presentation. Quality. So make sure that nobody sends out lousy mimeographed handouts and so forth and downgrades us. And what really occurs is that each central organization demands of me certain things. And these things are basically aesthetics, ethics, technology, which by the way includes research and compiling of research, publishing of bulletins, keeping the show on the road in various ways technologically, and awards, which is to say certificates. Now all certificates have to be guided. You cannot let a central organization handle certification. Because certification is a past action. They have trained them, they're through with them. And do you know that it's just certificates, just stack, 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 stack. Now, what I have to do personally, actually is what the HCO does. And that consists of holding the form and policy of a central organization so that it doesn't go off and do something weird. In other words, it's a planned activity, you see? Now, holding that form, that's a very important thing. The next thing is making sure that the auditor's code, the code of the Scientologist, are adhered to. Next thing is I have to make sure that the processing department is processing on processes that are getting results, and that the training department trains processes which will get results for the auditors being trained, and that the general form of training be adhered to, that the TRs are not departed from, and that sort of thing. And the next thing, I have to get together and sign all of the certificates and so on. Well, I continue to sign certificates, but who says they're okay to sign? Well, basically, that's an HCO board review function, but that comes under an HCO area secretary. Now, here's the final thing I do, is I watch the communication line. Central organizations are very fine, they do their work very well, but they are fixed terminals. And nobody watches the lines between the terminals. Nobody watches the inflow and outflow and inter-organizational lines. Now that actually comes under the heading of the first one I mentioned, which is the form of the organization has to be held. Well, they never watch lines, so HCO inherits lines. Hence, communication. See? Now, I have to watch all of these things. I, of course, watch more things than this. But wherever I have a hat, you will find an HCO has to help me wear that hat. And you will get these things whether they are planned to be gotten or not. You get the idea? For instance, I wear a hat called Justice. That's pretty weird. But a couple of auditors get into a squawk, or a PC begins to raise the dickens with some field auditor or something of the sort, and the next thing you know, I'm wearing this hat called Justice and Equity. So this hat really belongs under Ethics. So you can see that Ethics spreads out a long way. Now, technology, of course, is the whole body of the science. And that's a big subject, but most of it is preserved in books, on tapes, or in HCO bulletins, or PABs, or magazine articles. Therefore, HCO takes purview over all of these media. In other words, you have books, tapes, PABs, HCO bulletins, and magazine articles. This all forms a body of technology. Now, an HCO office has to make these things available to a local operation. They have to be available. Now, nobody else in the organization can be trusted with a tape, with HCO. And if training has tapes, they are checked out from HCO. And HCO doesn't check out the master. HCO checks out a copy. Now, we have stopped, pretty well stopped, circulating tapes. We're cutting them on records now. And you'll see all of the select old lectures of one kind or another and new lectures all coming out in records. But nevertheless, you have to do a certain amount of tape business. So that an HCO should be able to copy a tape without damaging it. It actually is no great trick. In absence of copying equipment, why, you should send it down to somebody who copies tapes and have them make a professional copy. But you'll find these professional copies are never as good as the one-for-one copies that an HCO communicator can make. But you have to have your master tape file of the tapes that are used for various lectures. That's number one. Tapes used for various lectures and tapes used to brief HGC auditors and that sort of thing, and you have to have those in master and never let a master out. Always let a copy out. And that's unreasonable because it might cost time and money to make a copy. But believe me, it's real grief when you lose your master. Yeah. Even Nibs one day chopped up a master on us. Yes, he left the room and let some student turn on the tape, and of course the student turned on the eraser. And that tape not only got erased in part, but was wound round and round the capstan and broken. And it was one of the 19th ACC tapes. And it was the best master we had. And so this sort of thing can go very badly awry. Now in awards, we have this new thing. It takes 3 years to make a DSCN. And we have this another new thing, which is the extension course. Now, it means that there's a lot of paperwork in the academy to collect one of these things together. All the HCO Board of Review does is make sure that all the papers are present and then examines. HCO Board of Review does not collect papers. Get that? Doesn't collect papers. It takes the collected papers. But HCO Board of Review also, through the HCO Secretary, has to be able to go into the enrollment files and look over and make sure that people who are trained are certified. Get the idea? That's just a little bit further look. So the HCO Secretary, not the HCO Board of Review, would be the person to take this up. Now, the HCO Board of Review is under the HCO Secretary. And you get a yow, 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 yow at once when you find too many students incomplete. See, that means that there's a lot of dissatisfied people out there who don't have certificates or who weren't well trained. So you have to keep the certification up to date by making the academy do the work. Now, I have to do that all the time, so of course it's the job of an HCO secretary, you see? All right. Now, there's CLEAR and CLEAR bracelet, and a central organization can test and examine and test and examine and check people out for CLEAR to their heart's content. They can also test students to their heart's content, but it doesn't mean a thing. They send somebody to HCO to get their CLEAR bracelet, and HCO checks them out for CLEAR or otherwise. And that's all. So, you have the HCO Board of Review again checking out an award. Now, the actual makeup of the certificate is now under HCO. There have been too many random certificates. And a certificate properly, they aren't reading that way quite this minute, but a certificate properly should read across the top, Hubbard Communications Office, straight across the top, issues for, and all that's in very, very little type, tiny type, hardly distinguishable, great big type, you see. Hubbard Association of Scientologists International, Melbourne, Australia. You get the idea?
Mm-hmm.
See? And we issue their certificates. Now, we have them lettered and all that sort of thing, but that's all just set up as a mechanical action. A certificate is not made up until it's checked out and all examinations are done by the HCO Board of Review. Now, this is the business of the HCO Secretary. All the HCO Board of Review does is assist the HCO Secretary to carry out this award idea. Now, these I'm explaining here are just some of the working facets of HCO today. But HCO, in its general form, is something you have to know well. There are three types of HCO office. The first is HCO Worldwide. And that actually is HCO Limited, a British registered company. Now, all copyrights, trademarks, rights of materials, and everything else are assigned over to HCO Limited. So they are mine, but are given to, for use, HCO Limited. Now, HCO Worldwide is located in London, and London is the only organization which has a three-stack office. It has HCO Worldwide, HCO Continental, HCO London. There are three HCO offices working there. Now, there are actually a lot of the personnel just doubling in brass in these offices, you see. But nevertheless, they have to keep sight of the fact that there are three offices. Now, Worldwide, of course, takes care of the central summary of all organizations which are enfranchised, files their financial reports, gets the final summary on all legal actions that have been taken get the idea, and sums it all up, in other words. That sums it all up. Now, on every continent, and this is moving right into action, and there is one additional one, which isn't a continent. That's New Zealand, which is going in. But on every continent and New Zealand, and there probably someday be a, quote, continental office down in Asia Minor. But that's beside the point. We will still call these things continental offices. Now, it's a misnomer, really, to say, then, HCO England. The least it'd be would be HCO United Kingdom, including Scotland and Wales, you see. And it would also include Ireland, and it probably also would include bits of Scandinavia. But we still call it a continental office. Now, there's one fine day, there will be a continental office probably located in Berlin. But that has not moved up to any status yet. There is a continental office which is going in at this moment in Johannesburg. And the HCO secretary is in training in London at this instant for that office. The one continental office that is doing exceptionally well is HCO Melbourne. And that says HCO Melbourne, but actually the continental office is HCO Australia. But because their central action and interest is Melbourne, they still call themselves HCO Melbourne, you see. But they're really HCO Australia. Now, of course, we have HCO, not really United States, but North America. But unfortunately, it's also North and South America, so it should be HCO America. See? That's its proper title. Now, that is located in Washington, D.C. Now, let's take a look at this office called HCO America. Of course, there's other HCO offices in this area. There's one of sorts that will eventually come into full bloom, I'm sure, in Puerto Rico. There's one going in right after the ACC. The girl for it is being trained in the 21st ACC, and she's going back out to Los Angeles, and there'll be one going into Los Angeles. It already has money. Which is quite a thing. Now, what happens here essentially? HCO Worldwide issues a franchise to a central organization. Now, it doesn't matter whether I'm an officer of the central organization or not. That franchise is still the thing which gives them the right to materials, the use of trademarks. It gives them the use of copyrights. It gives them several services and rights. Now, for that, they pay 10% of the gross. And this franchise is being issued currently. And it's a very thick contract. And it takes up practically everything you ever heard of, legally or otherwise, by which the HCO can do this and can do that, the central organization can do this and can do that. But this contract is the only thing which gives the central organization a right to be. Its own corporation papers are not worth anything in the absence of a franchise, you see. The pattern for this, horribly enough, is Coca-Cola. Now, here's what Coca-Cola does. Coca-Cola has one international corporation which issues the right to use the name Coca-Cola. You got that? I hate to bring such a crude example into Scientology, but it is. You'll have to have this example, by the way, to make some attorney understand what you're talking about. This is why I'm mentioning it, because attorneys don't get it otherwise. There are local companies which have nothing to do with a Coca-Cola company, which call themselves Coca-Cola. But there's a worldwide organization which enfranchises these local companies. Got the idea? And the local company is autonomous. I hate to bring in that crude example, but this is the legal aspect of it. Now, here's what we have, essentially. Just wipe that out. And here's what we have, essentially. We have a worldwide organization called Hubbard Communications Office, which holds all of the copyrights all around the world, all of the trademarks and everything else. Now, this organization enfranchises local organizations. It enfranchises them. It tells them they can operate. And if they do not have a franchise in good standing, they cannot operate. And it's the first job of HCO to capture all copyrights whenever or however they've ever been issued. Capture all copyrights and to make sure that nobody does anything in Scientology that is not covered by a franchise. An HCO secretary has carte blanche in the hiring of attorneys to capture copyrights or to restrain squirrel actions or activities. Now, on this basis, this franchise is sufficiently tough that it holds in court very easily. Real money is being paid for these rights, and these rights have real worth. Evidently, the copyrights of Dianetics and Scientology, trademarks and so forth, are worth $10 to $15 million. A court listens to this. Now, we're operating in the real universe, unfortunately, at times, and courts have a tendency to throw things aside that don't have real value. But this has real value. Now, you mean that somebody is going to issue an illegal certificate in Pasadena? He's going to call somebody an HCA or a Scientology auditor in Pasadena. Oh, HCO just shoots him, kills him, hangs him, harasses him, hires detectives to investigate his mother and shoots her. You get the idea. We don't permit it. See, we just go absolutely all out and overboard. Because this is the one thing which I think you will admit has damaged Dianetics and Scientology more than anything else. All right, so we just wipe them out. I got a letter the other day from an auditor in California, and he offers me 15% of two HCA courses, which he is going to teach. And he tells me he's going to teach them in any event, whether they are allowed or not. Well, he's got another think coming, because he's got an HCO that's going in just the next few weeks, right up the line from him. And, of course, what do you think will be the primary action there? There are several squirrel activities going around in the California area right now, and I suppose that HCO will practically have a hard time trying to service its own central organization. It will be so busy knocking squirrels in the head. But once it's got them all knocked in the head, for the first time, California could be a decent going area.
It's a big job.
That's a big job. But we know how to do it. It's pretty easy, by the way. They fold up quick the second that they see somebody really staring down their necks. So they think that you're thousands of miles away. They can't do anything, you see. They can think they can do anything, but not when you're right there breathing down their necks. All right, now the area office, then, has an interest in both legal and illegal Scientology activities in that area. Now, until there are more HCO offices in the United States, it'll be hard to police all areas and knock out squirrel activities and so forth. But they aren't so bad, truthfully. They aren't so bad as they were once. And it can be done. Now, this, by the way, shouldn't occupy too much of an area secretary's time. But action has to be taken. She has to be alert to this sort of thing. Somebody calling himself a clear, issuing a bracelet, or somebody issuing a certificate, or somebody pretending he's been trained and selling himself as a professional auditor, all of these sort of things. Now, she has considerable authority in this line. An area office has an accountant and a lawyer. If it doesn't have these two things, it's got to get them quick. This lawyer should also be able to handle copyrights. So he can double in brass, you see. Now, the area office services the area central organization. The central organization in that immediate area. And an area office means just this. It means that HCO which does the work I have to do to keep that area office running. Now, oddly enough, I really don't find the personnel for an area office. I don't. I don't really write its letters. I don't pay too much attention to its legal affairs. I don't get licenses for its quarters, and I don't even sign its paychecks anymore. See, I don't do a lot of things. Well, so therefore, neither does HCO do any of those things. But I still do a great many things. One, I keep them informed. I keep them for technology. I keep them ethically straight. Keep them squared with the codes. And I make sure that their organizational form stays neat. That is to say that they just suddenly don't create five more departments and get lots of doodle-daddles and get in a horrible squirrel up someplace, you see. Now that we have a much better organizational pattern, this is quite vital. And I make sure that they issue certificates and that these certificates get signed. So, these are all the basic duties of HCO area office. Now, this particular organization here has had very little done for it. You find, in spite of the fact they're apparently running, a tremendous amount has to be done for this local organization right here in terms of hats, policies, certificates are way behind. Its auditors are poorly coached. It's just got a brand new registration line, but that hasn't been policed in. It has a new address machine, but the lines to that address machine are not proper yet. And in order to accomplish this, a system has been evolved. Now, you should know that an HCO office springs up by spontaneous combustion. They just jump into view. After an organization gets just so big, they'll start calling somebody the HCO secretary. It's already happened in two areas. Without any let from me, I suddenly found out we had an HCO. These are good HCOs. Now, we're terribly understaffed, and if we have an area office functioning happily and well alongside of a continental office, which is functioning well, we've really accomplished something. However, HCO Continental Secretary and the HCO Area Secretary are very often the same person. In the absence of one or the other, both hats are worn by the remaining one. Got this? Now, you have the communicator, an HCO communicator, and in a low state, the communicator handles both internal and external. Now, you should get an idea of what I mean by internal and external. Internal is what I've been talking about. Area, local operation. That's internal. That's the internal HCO. Now, it goes on an external line to other HCOs through continental, through worldwide. And that's external. Now, in spite of the fact you have to double in brass, and the HCO communicator is can be HCO... Area and HCO Continental in spite of that fact, he's got two distinct lines. And we must remember that when we are wearing two or more hats, what hats we are wearing. Otherwise, they become terribly entangled. All right. Now, you have the HCO communicator then is servicing both. He's acting as communicator for internal. He's acting communicator for external. And by external, we mean the international setup. But we are very fortunate if we have an HCO secretary, area, who is totally devoted to the area and who is working with that area. That is good. That is real good. Her first order of business is to operate through the secretarial to the executive director, which is a very interesting mock-up. People don't pay any attention when you're thousands of miles away. So secretarial executive director is carefully on the premises. Now, as you're not, I'm not thousands of miles away now. I'm right there. And when an order is issued, it's not issued nebulously from London for somebody to agree with, maybe. You get the idea? It's issued for Melbourne, secretarial, executive director, Melbourne. Hazy Melbourne, it says, right there, on it. Now, nobody can doubt the validity of this or that it has local interest. Now, those secretarials are carefully called secretarial so that we don't get another entity in contest with the HCO secretary. HCO really does not boss the central organization. The central organization is autonomous. HCO only helps the central organization, and by the virtue of its franchise, can kick it around and call for arbitration and so forth when it doesn't comply with the basic standards of Scientology. And that's all it can do. But secretarial executive director could be the secretary to the executive director, you see, just as easily. But now we've created a new post, and that is not the intention here. So it is always secretarial. It is the HCO secretary's executive line into the organization. And secretarial executive director is also HCO steno. Those two hats go together in the same person. Now, a hat is not a hat anymore in a central organization unless it's secretarial executive director. On blue paper, black ink, with a corporation seal on every valid copy. See? Crash. When any secretarial executive director is issued, it is published on the bulletin board and given to the persons to whom it applies. Now, this means secretarial executive director operates as the secretary to the ADCOM, advisory committee or advisory council. Secretarial executive director operates as secretary to the board or any other committee action or board action that takes place. This person, who is really the HCO steno, turns up as the recording secretary, prepares the minutes, and sends them to their proper places for signature. That's one action. The other action this person takes is to collect old hats. Somebody departs, this person's supposed to be right down on it, where's that person's hat, and collects it and gets it back. And if the hat is lost, replaces it and gives it to the new person who takes the post. If there's any new hat write-up, secretarial executive director issues it. See? If there are any changes to take place in the organization by its orders, secretarial executive director changes them. So you get, in essence, hat preparation and write-up and the issuance of general orders for the local organization through secretarial executive director. But who's her boss? HCO secretary, isn't it? Well, this is wonderful and remarkable. We've made a bridge between two organizations. Now, you get HCO secretarial letters. Nobody, very seldom, will you get anything that says, Secretarial Executive Director for Washington, D.C. only. Because if it's going wrong in one place, it's going wrong someplace else, too. But you do get incidental orders to that effect, so they can't be excluded. Instead of that, you get an HCO secretarial letter. Now, this HCO secretarial letter arrives in a central operation and is converted by Secretarial Executive Director after being viewed by the HCO secretary. It's converted, and it says, Secretarial Executive Director Hazi Johannesburg. She types it all up. They never mimeographed unless they're for the whole staff or something. She puts a copy on the board. She puts a copy to the persons, too, and that's it. She's issued it. Now, these are all policies. These things are basically policies. They're hats and so on. They may have particularities, but they definitely have lots of policies connected with them. Well, now, what do we do? What do we do to keep the organizational form? Not only does the HCO secretary call up people on technology, but calls them up on policy. Now, when she has an able secretarial executive director, an HCO steno, she can entrust some of this to the HCO steno, you see, that person. Knows that a new hat was issued, of course, 3 days ago. Isn't it about time we called up that person, asked him if he knows his hat? Now, why do we do that? But central organizations won't do it. They won't do it. This is the one thing we can't make them do. They will get a person on the job. They get a person on the job. They will get work done. But they will never review his hat. With him. So we call up the purchasing clerk. We say, we've had new hat about 3 days, haven't you? Secretarial Executive Director undoubtedly does this under the HCO Secretary's review. Had new hat for about 3 days. Would you bring it up here? And the fellow comes up to the office. And the secretary, executive director, or the HCO secretary, doesn't matter which, except it makes it awfully apparent that HCO is running everything. If the HCO secretary doesn't put up a small shield there. And he says, now, what's the purpose of a purchasing clerk, she says, taking his hat away from him so he can't read it. What's the purpose of a purchasing clerk? And he says, well, they're supposed to purchase things. He says, why don't you read this over and come back and see me tomorrow morning? She eventually keeps from getting lost the technology in organization which is so hardly won. See, she keeps this from getting lost. If there isn't somebody there keeping those policies and those lines from getting lost, they gradually get twisted and turned and perverted until it's unrecognizable and the organization goes broke. Now, if I were a bad manager, and if these organizations were not successful, forcing policy, which might be unreal, down their throats and so forth, would be quite adventurous. But we have a pretty good record of success in a fairly tumultuous society. We've kept the show on the road. We pulled a lot of stuff out of the fire, and I've certainly worked for years now trying to find out what one of these organizations should look like. All right, now for sure, we don't want that form to go awry. So really, nobody's asking the HCO secretary or the secretarial executive director to do more than two things. One, make sure that existing policies and hats are published in the right hands and understood. See, that's one. And the other one is, if there's a gap, yell for help. Got the idea? Yell quick.
Yeah.
See this? Now, a girl can do that. Particularly a smart one like you. Now, there are many other little bits and pieces to the post, but straight away there's one great big job that you're facing right this minute, which is actually the finalizing of hats of a central organization. And that's going to be done in the next few weeks. The hats are right now being collected by Mary Sue. And she is condensing old hats, and then she's going to forward them through to me, and I will rewrite them from the material that she has culled out of them. And then I'll issue them through to you. You look them over and make sure that Secretary and Executive Director prepares them, stamps them, issues them, they arrive, and that the old hat that was there is collected up and filed. Never throw any hat material. Got the idea? Now, that little action will be going on right here for the next many weeks. But what do you do if you see something going awry which is adequately covered in secretarial orders?
You're asking me?
Yeah.
Well, I think I would find out where it was going awry.
That's right. You'd run it down. Something is going wrong. One of the first actions you could take is simply republish it as a brand new order.
Yeah.
See? You could just republish it and put it up on the board. Up on the main B-board. That's the least action you would take. And you'd try to run it down. You'd try to call in the people involved and find out what. They might be running into something quite real. They also might not be. Now let's take up a principle. There are several principles on which we operate. One is HCO in enfranchising must not become itself involved with the central organization as such. It can't identify itself with a central organization. Otherwise, it becomes liable for the actions of a central organization, and it becomes subject to seizure and so forth in the event of central organization sudden failure. See, a lot of things. So it's got to have a separate identity. That's the main thing. That has to be preserved at all costs. So therefore, although you issue orders through Secretary and Executive Director, one and all must understand that Secretary and Executive Director is a part-time job because we don't want to burden the organization with that person's pay. We're being nice, you understand? Now, we issue all the books. Now, here is HCO Continental. HCO Area issues only those books which are sold locally. What books are actually sold across the counter by the FC under the notice of HCO Area? So HCO Area must always make available books to students, pre-clears, the public walking in the front door, and so forth. But, so help me, I don't know quite how we're going to solve this totally forever without becoming a kind of a bookstore.
Yeah.
And the one thing we don't want to have HCO become is a bookstore. So some sort of a deal is made with the organization to sell these bits and pieces. But an HCO secretary watching $2 disappear every time a $4 book is sold is liable to get a little restive after a while. And is liable to start pulling this close in. So why shouldn't HCO pay some little fragment of reception's salary for the time actually occupied in selling the books? That's reasonable, isn't it? All right. And make sure that those books are supplied and that reception doesn't get careless with them and lose them. Because books have been lost the length and breadth of the world. And we're taking them all over. HCO is taking books over everywhere. And we will inventory the actual books in stock every quarter. And that gets checked by accounting, by the HCO accountant, against book sales slips. And then maybe we can afford to sell books. HCO can make money out of books, but central organizations can't. That's another little datum. They just can't do it. We can transfer books all over the place and make money out of them. All right, so HCO Continental is usually involved in special events. HCO area only rarely would become involved in a special event, such as a Congress or an ACC. But certainly, we have HCO Continental being in charge of special events, such as ACCs, Congresses, and in charge of books, in charge of wide book sales, and in charge of the Continental magazine. The magazine doesn't belong to the HCO area secretary. The magazine belongs with the books. And the big stack, the big bulk, the mail orders, book sales, and so forth, are all done by HCO Continental.
Now, HCO Continental would be what?
In this case, this is Millie and half a Bonnie.
Uh-huh.
Bill Illing and Andy Bagley.
I see. Do they come under the other two that you just mentioned last, or they come under HCO?
What's that? Oh, yes. HCO is buying DCI and has already grabbed the Congress of Scientologists.
Mm-hmm.
Get the idea?
Yeah.
So DCI may go right on and run as DCI, but it's owned lock, stock, and barrel by the actual corporate status of HCO, not even owned by another person, you see? Now, this means that right here we have the magazine ability being gotten out by Millie. Book sales, invoicing of, and that sort of thing, being supervised by Millie, that's mail order book sales. Books themselves being shipped and other items of this character being shipped to everybody around the country by the book administrator and shipping clerk, and they're going out on book promotion, and they also promote other things like ACCs and the Congress, that sort of thing. You get this idea. And this is incidental and is not really pattern in an area, but HCO Continental is here handling my personal affairs local.
Mm-hmm.
And that, by the way, is quite an item. Gets to be quite an item. Now, this doesn't mean that some of my personal affairs are not handled by HCO area, by a long way. Because what is Scientology at large to me, it may mean many things to many people and many things even to me, but it's a matter of personal pride with me and is almost a personal concern that it runs well and that it keeps from fouling up and that its dissemination goes good. Whatever else it means, it also means this little one. You see? Now, this means that HCO Continental is very busy. Very busy. You got a magazine, and you've got probably the check over of area office receipts and this sort of thing. But truthfully speaking, you cannot expect HCO Continental to really handle the local area, and it never has here.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have handled the local area very personally with its own officers,
And
I badly need help in doing this, just desperately, particularly now I'm trying to get it up to speed and get it in a little bit better organized shape. All right, I spoke of one of several policies. Here's another one of these policies on which we operate. One, we don't permit this identification of central organization and HCO to take place. Here's another policy. Is HCO tries to get the central organization to buy any and all of its equipment and pay any and all of its bills, but failing does it itself. Neat trick. Neat trick. It takes a little bit faster shuffle than you would think sometimes. Now, that's a principle. Another thing is that we try not to burden the central organization with salary expenses. So HCO pays its own salary. Now, this sometimes is a little bit slippy. It's a little bit hard to do, to pay all of your expenses and everything else and make both ends meet and publish new books and all that sort of thing. And the reason we had to take over books was two. One, they weren't being sold or handled well, and the other was we had to pay our own way. But if HCO is paid by the central organization, as it has been in the past, accountants instantly identify the two, and you could never argue them out of it. Another thing is, it burdens the local staff.
Yeah.
And you can't hire anybody new in HCO. Now, supposing you're doing well, this is why HCO Continental America never really won. It just was a shame to overburden the FCDC with as many staff as were actually needed. Now, the second we pulled it out from underneath, you see, the second we pull this out from underneath on payroll, you notice we suddenly expand.
Yes.
And we start to do our job. But I've had to work far, far too hard. And each personnel in this office had to work too hard. It's not that we're afraid of hard work, but we don't get our jobs done. That's the serious thing. There's always a tremendous lot left over.
Yes.
And the lot left over, on one side, has been the smooth operation of the central organization. It runs on an emergency basis because there's no HCO's area secretary looking after it. And on the other side of it, my writing suffers like mad.
Mm-hmm.
So we're cutting our throats on both sides. We're cutting our dissemination, and we're cutting our local action. Now, what's intended here is that one never tangle, here's another principle, one never tangle with the org sec or association secretary.
Mm-hmm.
One just never tangles with this person. There's a zone of operation for each hat. And the HCO secretary, I can be sure, can understand this. I suppose that it'll be less understanding on the other side. The ASOC secs and org secs and so forth around the country. One, they have a tremendous burden.
Mm-hmm.
They are not backed up very tightly by myself, because they can't be. They're to a large degree out of communication. They get people and put them on the job. They try to do and get local enthusiasm and excitement. They try to get the work done. And in trying to get these things done, they very often foul up on policy. And they have never enforce policy. So we let them get the people. We let them get the work done. But we take care of policy and comm lines. The idea. We make sure that when somebody's changed on post, he's issued a hat. And if the org sec or a SOC sec thinks there's a tremendous hole in his organization, we probably know there isn't. We probably know he just hasn't provided personnel for a post or something of the sort. So HCO, we in HCO become the experts on organizational form. We just study it until we know it backwards and upside down. On a highly theoretical level, we don't care anything about the thing except that it doesn't work. And you find out it works. But here is why it's a full-time job, almost. There's a rule. Here's another one of these little policies in which we operate. You can put order in until order stays.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put confusion in until confusion stays. But you can put order in till order stays. But every time you put in a little bit of order, you blow off some confusion. It's the old confusion, the stable datum, but it's a little new look on it. And this, every time you put in order, you blow off a little confusion.
Blow it off.
It just blows off. Uh-huh. Remember, it's blowing off.
Uh-huh. It doesn't come in on the order.
No. No, it blows off. It's quite interesting. It excites it. It comes into view and
uh-huh.
then dissipates and disappears,
yeah, I see that.
Which is quite interesting. The disorder was there inherently. See, it was already there. And we put a little order into that mass of disorder, and a little disorder blew off. Now, what it looks like to us is that nobody wants to comply with what we want them to do. And we get pretty ornery after a while about this, you see. And we say, damn those dogs anyway. Why won't they snap and pop, you know? Well, that isn't the way it is. What happens here, really, is there's just so much disorder got to blow off. I just might as well make up your mind to it. Now, if you can predict or expect something, you can handle it. But if it always comes as a surprise to you, as it has to us in the past, for instance, the registrar line is a line, you'll have a reality very soon on what I have to contend with. Now, no less persons than Dick Steeves and Nibs put in the registrar line exactly according to the way we wanted them in, whereby a pre-clear being signed up was sent to technical for an estimate and then was returned. And they did it perfectly. Perfectly. Like a perfect, cheerful idiots. They put time in there where there was no time written in. Turn off that heater, would you? They put time in where no time was written. You know what they did? They sent the pre-clear to testing, to be tested the following Monday, and then returned the pre-clear to the registrar. And I never found out about this until finally the registrar said, I don't like to hold the money all this time. And I said, well, it doesn't seem to me, it seems rather queer that you'd be objecting to holding money for 10 or 15 minutes. And 10 or 15 minutes, she says, I sometimes have to hold it for 5 days. 5 days. I said, what happens to the pre-clear? What do you do, ship him to Chicago? Well, they had two contrary orders, they thought. They thought they had to give him written tests. But even then, they could have done this. And instead of giving individual separate tests to every pre-clear that walked in and send them back to the registrar or test them in some fashion, they were holding him over for the next wide testing period. Oh, that's enough to drive you daffy. Honest, it had been going on for a year, and I'd keep knowing there was just something wrong with this line, and I'd go down and I would say, now, are you sure you're doing it this way? Are you sure that when you sign them up, you just sign them up for anything, and then they go into technical to be checked over and accepted, and then come back to you. Yes, that is the way we do it, these knuckleheads would say.
Plus.
Yeah, plus. Now, what in London was very amusing, wonderful example of this. I got an order for Kalamazoo. Visual index. You ever see one of those things? They're great big steel slabs with great big cards on them, and you can read any of the cards at any time. You just flip up masses of cards and you read the cards under them. They're a huge, you know, that huge piece of machinery. You know, great big things. You pull them out in long drawers and all that sort of thing. I kept getting requests from Central Files for Kalamazoo. I said, I don't understand it. So I went down and I looked up this. You see, this kind of thing I do. Hardly anybody ever sees me do this sort of thing, see? And I go down, and why do they want a Kalamazoo? Well, it's because they've got a guy on CF who factually cannot confront his own files. Do you know that he has a file folder? He's got file folders and central files, all right, but he makes up a complete card index system, he did, that stands over here at the side, that he looks up to see if the file is in CF. But he won't make up a file for just one letter. That goes over into a waiting file, and that's how you have to have the card index system. So you see whether or not the person's name is in CF or in waiting file or what. And if he had a Kalamazoo, you see, he could tell this so much more easily. Oh, for heaven's sakes. I had a good laugh even with the CF person over this when I finally squashed this down to where it belonged, which is a file folder by definition for every person who originates to the organization. And that folded up all the rest of the vias. And we had, at one time, we had, I think, four, I'm not sure I'm right about this, but I think we had four CF people because we had such a complicated system. Get the idea? Now, the stunt of an executive doing something different than we're doing, an executive is trying to handle people, keep them on post, make them happy or avoid them or confront them or not confront them. He's trying to make sure that their pay is right and that they do get some work done and that they don't goof off. And he's interested in a lot of things, and they have to do with personnel and they have to do with work. Well, we're just purists. We're interested in particle flow. We're interested in lines and making sure that the terminals on those lines know what they're doing. There are five departments in a central organization, though. There's the Department of Accounts. There is the Department of Materiel. There is the Department of Promotion and Registration. These three departments come under administration, the administrative division. Then there are two service units, the Academy and the HGC. Now here's the next theory that we work on, and you'll see how it applies to this. The next theory we work on is that an organization is composed of terminals and communication lines related by a common purpose. And that's an organization. And all the organizational pattern does is help separate the types of particles being handled. That, in a nutshell, is an organization and what it does. Now, to make a perfect organization, evidently all you have to do is find out what particles come in, how they are changed, and how they're gotten rid of. That's all. That's all. And if there's any friction on the lines, why, it's got to be moved out. Now that's the system on which a Scientology operation basically operates. It takes a lot of looking. But if you were to make a list of all of the things which came into the organization and find out where each one went and what should happen to that, and then find out where it went after that, and if you made lists of all of these, you would wind up with hats. See? That's all there is to it. Actually, there aren't so many. Otherwise, it looks terribly confusing until you understand that and really count them, because there are not very many. There are PCs, there are students, there are PC applicants, there are student applicants, there are PC ARC breaks, there are student ARC breaks, there's business letters and bills, and there's the particle known as money. And all of these things have to have certain things happen to them. And if the organization isn't making these things happen to them, all of a sudden, you've not got an organization, you've got a big camouflaged hole. So all policy is related to is the flow of particles and their change, their receipt, change, and ejection. No particles ever stay in an organization. Really. They don't stay in an organization forever. Sometime or another, they depart. So how do they depart? You know, organizations just swell up and bust through never departing any? Huh? Well, one of the methods of departure is into a file drawer. And wherever you see a file case, you've got a departure. That's left. And until it's pulled out of that drawer and put back on the lines again, it's not in the organization, it's in the files. So the files are really just outside the organization. If you consider that way, and you've got it made. Now you can actually introduce one of these files into the organization, and you know what a file is down in CF? It's a counterfeit body. And everything pertaining to the person should be either in the CF files or in the testing files. And the CF file should have the profile in it, too. So we introduce this counterfeit body back into the organization. How does it get around and get changed or something done with it and get back in the CF again? How do we suddenly furnish up a piece of this counterfeit body known as an address and put it onto something? And where does it go in order to get out of address and back into address? How do we get an ability mailed? See? How do we get the addresses on the thing? How do we make sure they're proper addresses? Who checks them? What you've got here, in essence, is something which, to a casual view, the first time you glance at it, looks confusing. But the one thing it isn't is confusing. And the one thing it collects is confusion.
Simple.
Yes, it's too simple. All right. So we put this new datum in. We say there's a policy. And it says when a central file folder is taken out, a dummy folder is put in its place, and the flash color card of the one of the five divisions, each one has a flash color, the flash color card which is sent for that folder, had a person's name on it, is put on the dummy. It is stapled on the dummy. The CF folder then goes to that department by CF liaison, not through the communication center. It just goes by CF liaison. He just takes it up there. And when it has been gone for its proper period of use, it is then returned to CF and is never kept in a second file. Now, we can then open CF at any time, and we see nothing but maroon cards everywhere.
There we go.
Yeah, we know who maroon is. See, whoever maroon is, well, we go see him and say, where? All right. But we issue this order. CF in charge says this completely disrupts everything. That's the first thing he tells you. Or he merely looks apathetic. The way we handle this is very simple. We just get him to read the order. He says, what does Ron mean? Your answer to this, and this is something you will get to know very, very well, is, what did he say? Oh, it's impossible. And he reads off this order, you see? And you say, well, then that is what you do. And this is just like auditing. You finally flatten the comm line. And you don't really Q&A with his confusion. The second you Q&A with his confusion, you're dead. Next thing you know, you'll be trying to rewrite directives. You'll be trying to do this. Only this is grooved over here. These lines are very carefully merged with another set of lines over here. And it'll start going out of gear and kilter. Yeah, and the next thing you know, why, it's all confusion. So, this is what I meant when you put in a little bit of order in, you get some confusion. Just expect it. Expect that any time you issue an order, you're going to hear from some confusing side of it. They'll ask you some of the weirdest questions. When we tried to put in, we haven't got in yet totally, I know, just by instinct, but we've more or less got into place the new registrar line. And boy, the confusion that came off of that. It even blew one of the girls off the post for a week. There was enough confusion. Now, I didn't worry about it, because I just knew that there was enough confusion going to blow off there, and when the confusion died down a little bit and it disappeared, well, we'd put it in again. Get the idea? And we get a little more confusion off, and you're going to see this week, because we're going back and tamper with this line again and get it in a little more snugly. And you're going to see some more confusion. The first thing was the messenger, the CF liaison who brought the folders up, was this person really the director of promotion and registration? Now, that seems impossible that anybody would make this confusion, and yet they nevertheless made it. Not one, but two people made this mistake. But it didn't say that anywhere. Now, what it takes, it's an auditing job. It's an auditing job. And they say, what does he mean? And you say, what did he say? And you say, read it. Read it out loud. Now, that's what he meant. Now, after a while, this is the only point where this breaks down. You may find here and there, under changing circumstances or something of this sort, you may actually find that here and there we've got a hole. It would be unusual not to find a hole. Well, you find the holes privately. Don't take them off this Q&A thing, because it looked to you like they're just all holes. Mm-hmm. See? Now, you'll find some weird things occurring. People, otherwise very responsible, normally quite responsible, will get a fad going. Well, the fad was staff reads comic books in reception. And therefore, we must put reception and the comm center in the basement of 1810. And there was great pressure on this for a while. How do you suppose this organization could function with its comm center, for God's sakes, down in the basement of 1810? Huh? They wouldn't, would it? Not for a minute.
Never occurred that the comic books might be the reason.
We might have some other remedy for this than destroying all of the communication of the organization. But you can listen respectfully to this sort of thing, and it'll seldom come to your attention, except you'll find it in advisory council things. Now, the reason why your secretarial executive director is the secretary for each committee or board is to give HCO a good look at what's going on, without its demanding its minutes. Got the idea?
Mm-hmm.
When you see something real squirrely, why, you yell at me. See? You yell my direction.
May I ask a question, Matthew?
Yes.
Now, the secretarial executive director, you say that's part-time post.
It's part-time only to this degree, that the rest of the time is spent as HCO steno.
I see.
Get the idea? Yeah, that's why it's part-time. Actually, it's being very part-time right now. The girl on that post, Gloria, is getting a lot of auditing. And she'll be back full-time probably next week. In any event, that is a full-time post. That girl is paid, by the way, by the FC, which I carefully got and allowed. Take that off the back of our decks on one of the earlier principles I talked to you about. We can make the central organization pay traffic. You can. And maintain independence at the same time. All right. Now, here's a more serious thing. Are the auditors in the HGC, following procedure, getting decent profiles, are new auditors being brought on the job being broken in according to HCO bulletins? Because there's a procedure for this. Are their results adequate? Are they ARC breaking their pre-clears like mad? Have they squirreled in some fashion? Are they running some kind of a dopey fad? Is their interpretation of existing procedure correct or for the birds? You'll find some of the weirdest interpretations.
Been there.
Yes, sir. It's pretty weird sometimes. And now, they are entitled to a certain amount of information. And you, with technology and other things, right straight away there, you can make sure that they do get these bulletins and the proper bulletins are reissued to them and so on. They do get literature. You can make sure of this. But having gotten it, you also make sure they understand it. So therefore, if they have auditors' conferences, it is not remiss for you to attend them. And you may also listen to sessions. Yes, and let's find out how. Let's say you get in a packet of profiles, and there's two of them that are very, very bad. A whole week. And these pre-clears are continued over. Here's a good example. This you would certainly go and find and listen to. You just listen to these boys' sessions. And check them over. And go and talk to them. Talk to the DOP. Director of Processing. And say, come off of this. Something's going on here. It's real poor, you know. Let's see if we can improve this. There are many ways of doing so. There are HCO bulletins here, so and so and so and so. Were you aware of these bulletins? Yes, I know, but I just can't find auditors, and you know, there draws some confusion. That's all right. Expect it. Just stand back and let it blast, you know, and then put in a little more order. The Academy, you are fortunate right here at this moment. The Academy is another zone where randomity develops one kind or another. An Academy curriculum has now been so codified that it is quite a drill. You do have, however, at this moment, a good DOT fudge. And you can expect to be overworked when you have a poor or squirreling DOP or DOT. You can just expect to be overworked in that particular division. And at that time, you should start looking frantically around to recommend to me certain changes. Get the idea?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in my dual capacities and so forth, it is very easy for me to affect these changes. Difficult for you to, but it's very difficult for me to. But nevertheless, to do your job, it becomes necessary that you are very clever in looking over the existing situation in any event and tracking on down the lines, making sure that people do know policies, and when they are apparently so damn knuckleheaded that they just can't make it at all, you might call it to the attention of the org sec or the administrative assistant. You might call it their attendant. So-and-so seems to be having an awful lot of trouble, you know, without putting it on the comm lines and so forth. But if something isn't changed then, and they apparently haven't paid very much attention to it, that's the time to yell for help.
Mm-hmm.
Get the idea? You try to keep it smooth, try to keep the communication squared, and otherwise make it answer up. Now, actually, there's a financial side to your job. And that financial side, in an area that does not have a continental office, the HCO secretary takes care of all the local finance. HCO area secretary takes care of all the local finance. Invoices and disperses. Invoices the 10% check. Disperses all the wages and so forth. And does this with the assistance of an outside accountant. So that she never has to make up books or something of that sort, or balance bank accounts or something of this sort, but nevertheless does have to invoice everything and does have to disperse everything by check. Now, you are the one responsible here that the FC pays the proper 10% of the gross. Even where there's a continental office present, the area secretary has to make sure of the local operations remittance. Now, the continental office would be more interested in the ACC and the Congress than it would be that 10%. But in this particular case in Washington, the continental office also takes care of my personal bank accounts. See, you don't have any interest in that. But an area secretary could have interest in that, don't you see?
Mm.
In the continued and prolonged absence of the continental secretary, area secretary had to assume many of these posts, so some familiarity with that zone has to exist too. Now, none of this, to say all this is very simple, would be a simple-minded statement. The truth of the matter is, however, in breaking in on a post, remember that you are interested in having a good running area operation. That's first and foremost. That thing has got to make money. It's got to have excitement. There's got to be enthusiasm. And failing these things, everything else fails. Now, to get a good HCO office working, you have to have, or be sure that we have, an accountant and a lawyer. You have to make sure that our copyrights are well secured. You have to make sure that the local operation receives its franchise and understands it and continues to understand it and continues to be aware of the fact that it has one. Get the idea. Make sure that it's ethical activities, that it doesn't engage in something like everybody who comes in and applies as a student gets a certificate. This has happened in about three operations, so I'm not just dreaming. No kind of a goofball thing like that occurs. Or that extravagant promises are made to PCs coming in. So on, this is all under ethics. Two, that the technology is available for the Academy and the HGC. Therefore, you have to have a library. In a sort of a shambles state, yes. Well, it will be moved right in where you are, and you will really have to create its final form. Then you have to be sure that people answering letters know what they're talking about. Get the idea. You have to be sure also that letters, when they are written, and bulletins and things, when they are put out, have a certain aesthetic, that they are put out cheap. In your area, you have to make sure that a presentation is good. Now, if we have a Thursday night auditor's training, which we probably have here for local town people or something of the sort, so the HGC can have spare auditors, we make sure that the tape recorder used has good quality and that there's good voice tone coming out of it, you know. We just make sure that takes place. If we show a film, we make sure that it's all high-fidelity equipment and expert projection, a good screen, you know, that sort of thing. We don't let some corny action of an old broken-down tape recorder that you can barely understand and the audience going to sleep and that sort of thing, and that there's no program, that the program in general wasn't arranged, you know, and that sort of thing. In the level of awards, you make extremely certain that your certificates and so on do get issued when somebody has been trained. And the clear bracelets aren't handed out like confetti and this sort of thing. And you generally sit on the lid on these various things. Now, there's a new theory which assists an executive a great deal, and that is that you have an HCO communicator type person in each one of the departments who actually is a member of the central organization. Now, these people would be called expediters or communicators. Now, we look to HCO to put their hats on, and this has not really begun yet. We only have one in one department now. But eventually, some of that would come under your interest. More interesting to you is project engineering. And project engineering, we just get staff auditors and get them to put life into things and keep their interest going by letting them supervise small projects. And all of project engineering is written up in its own briefs and bulletins. Yeah. Now, there, in essence, is the scope of HCO area secretary. It takes quite a bit of doing, takes quite a bit of study and understanding. You're very fortunate coming on at this time because all the hats are just now being rewritten and there aren't too many old bulletins. All right. But one of the things you should remember to do is to go and look at the MEST. Go and look at the MEST. Make sure that if you know of a line, that you yourself trace it through. Just how does this thing work? Just for your own information. And you'll find out in many cases that people on the line haven't a clue.
Now, in writing dispatches, like, say that I saw some things that I felt, like, would I always direct them to the head of the department?
Direct them to the head of the department. That is correct. But you'd be very smart to direct them to the secretarial executive director.
Oh. Everything goes through that terminal.
Yeah. Anything going into the organization goes through that terminal.
Whether it be dispatch or...
That's right. That's right. You just keep that thing grooved, you see. You go around and be a quiet ghost and look over everything and then make sure that the secretary or executive director issues the pertinent papers.
I had one other question about the engineering, whatever it is, the name of it. Now, am I to go ahead or am I to submit ideas or do you have any suggestions?
Haven't any projects. You would normally be the one that dreamed up these projects. You would normally be the one that dreamed them up.
Any particular directions you have in mind?
No. I haven't any for the U.S. I had 12 for London. But I didn't have any for here.
Well, just coming from the field, I have a good view
of
what could happen.
Oh. Well, a lot of things have got to be done. There's a lot of things got to be patched up. The motto of HCO is bring order. And if we bring order, we'll do a good job. Now, trying to organize the field is more important, if anything, than organizing a central organization. But if a central organization isn't smooth, there's no point in organizing the field. So the first thing that comes in is first we get HCO well organized. Then we get the central organization well organized. Then we get the field well organized. We want lots of auditors out there running lots of groups. And these are the directions we're working. You find out most of your questions are answered in directives of one kind or another, already issued. There's stacks of them. There's stacks of them. And we're building here on a very stable inflow of pre-clears and so on. We're doing all right. And it's time we got this really organized. That's why I'm glad you're on deck right now. Okay, are there any more questions on this?
No
more questions? All right. You got any questions about this, Millie?
No, not right.
You recognize, don't you, that HCO Area Secretary is doing something a bit different than HCO Continental.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
And you recognize that we have been to the largest degree, actually, kind of HCO Worldwide, HCO Continental, mainly.
I do have one quickly.
Yes.
You mentioned copyright and trademarks and that sort of thing. You were talking about HCO. Now, I want to know primarily, is that HCO Continental? More than HCO Area Sec or what?
No, ma'am. That's HCO Area.
Area Sec.
You shouldn't have
had
that
ready.
That's
no,
HCO
I,
Area
I
Sec. For 18 different reasons. First of them is that the Area Sec would be the one better on the lines to see squirrel publications of one kind or another.
Yeah.
Furthermore, would be the person most capable of contacting the individuals. She would also be sitting on their certificates.
That's a fact.
Yes, and she can contact individuals much better than Continental. Now, that doesn't mean that Continental doesn't rack it up. Eventually, Continental racks it up. And where you have a Continental in an area office, they would have the same accountant and the same lawyer.
Yes.
So this is very easy to handle. The responsibility of any copyright issued at this moment east of the Mississippi that is illegal is area.
Right.
And west of the Mississippi will be Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Continental has these things called to its attention and can recommend action, but would normally merely do the same thing the area secretary would do, which is turn it over to the lawyers.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
See?
Yes.
Now, there are several of these copyrights which are astray.
Mm-hmm.
And until we have collected them all and put a few heads on pikes, why, we have not secured things at all.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I've worked out a new method of getting a slander issued. Quite interesting. You know, a statute of limitations imposes over slander. Let's say Althea Hart, years ago, wrote some slanderous things and is now very quiet but still publishing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. He hasn't said anything slanderous within the term of the statute of limitations on slander or libel. All we have to do is to write Mr. Hart from some fictitious name and an actual address and get him to send us some of the old issues, and he has issued his slander all over again. And we're going to do it to Time Magazine, to Life, and all the rest of it as soon as we get going here.
My goodness.
We're going to get them to issue their slanders all over again, and we're going to have witnesses. Now, you got to have a witness there when that packet arrives.
Easy. You just, lawyer, have him notarize it.
Your envelope, its arrival envelope and so forth, shows the slander was issued today, not 5 years ago, which is what it says on the magazine. They're still disseminating this information.
Oh, wow.
Get them disseminated to two people and you've got it made. Now, we're willing to spend any amount of money to clean up and keep clean the name of Scientology and Dianetics. And it's just no mercy as far as we're concerned. The best way to do it, to handle somebody like Van Vogt or something like that might be interesting to him, is you hire a private detective and haunt him. And they fold up. That's all there is to it.
What do they do?
They just fold up.
They quit practice.
They blow up. I don't know why.
Guilty conscience, I suppose.
Must be, but we have found in 21 cases that 17 of these, now 18 of 21 cases, the people attacking Scientology and Dianetics and doing things the way these fellows have done have had criminal or communist backgrounds or both. Isn't that fascinating? So as soon as we start leaning on them with a private eye, why, they just go round the bend. So we instruct the private eye to go find out all about this person, just endlessly. And when he comes back, we just tell him we don't know enough yet. And he says, it's going to cost you another $100. And you say, well, don't make me faint. Go back and find out more about this person. Now, does this person know he's being investigated? Oh, no, I was very careful of that. Oh, you were very careful of that, were you? Well, this time, don't be quite so careful. Let him know he's being investigated. And you go back and find out more about him. And the weirdest thing, well, we closed up all the squirrels in England just that way. That's the way we're going to close them up here in the U.S. Of course, the odd part of it is they do accumulate fantastic data.
Oh.
I mean, each private eye sends you in one of these reports, your hair stands on end. My God, we found out one of these guys in England was never born.
Really?
He had no birth certificate in the British Isles. He had never been born in the British Isles. He's some sort of an alien who came over about the time Hitler was throwing spies into places. And I think he was an old Nazi spy of some kind or another. We traced him everywhere, and there's no birth record for him. We could finally wind up and say this man was never born in England, and yet he tells everybody and pretends that he's a British citizen and was born in England. And as soon as we leaned on him this hard and got this piece of information, he just folded up, and you've never seen him since. We had Pinkerton look up one girl and found out that she had vague criminal communist connections, called Lois Martin in Portland. That was our last one. Well, we've never heard from her since. Mm-hmm. They fold up. We're in the advantageous position of having nothing to hide and nothing to be ashamed of. And therefore, we can fight on a real clean line. But we mean to make one of these area operations work very factually, very real. We're going to generate much more excitement and enthusiasm in the public than we have before. Before, when we get a project idea, there was no way to ever follow it through. We could lay down an ideal academy, but I didn't have time to supervise, and the DOT was too busy handling students to ever supervise it. So we have this new look, and this new look is working out just beautifully. So that's it. Any more questions? Nothing?
Probably we'll have some more later.
All right. Well, that's more or less it then.